Generations of War, episode 110. Nice. Joined by my co-host, Salim.
Good evening, everybody.
A special guest from Noir, Cass Dyson.
Greetings, everyone.
And our very, 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 very special guest, noted author and Eve historian, Andrew Groan.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. That was a lot of varies, and I appreciate the noted adjective.
That makes me feel certainly
very rosy and special inside.
No, certainly, sir. It's such an honor to have a distinguished literary scholar here with us.
I appreciate it. It's really, really good time to be here. This is the first Eve podcast I've ever done, so I'm really excited to talk to you guys.
You hear that, guys? Exclusively on the Declarations of War podcast for another month, and then everyone else will get it.
Being first has a significance, I've heard.
All right. Some shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to Jeff. I'm not going to say his last name, but Jeff gave a very generous donation to Declarations of War yesterday through PayPal. Thank you very much, my friend. I deeply and truly appreciate it. Oh, also, Stevie McStevo is a new player that's been corresponding with me. And I convinced him to take a tour of the Eve Gate, and he went and he was blown away. He emailed me on his first day playing EVE Online, said he was hooked. He had listened to the show prior to trying the game, and we convinced him to take the plunge and give it a shot. He was hooked on the first day. I've been talking to him for the past couple days. Super nice guy. If anyone out there sees him applying to your corp, accept him, gets the Alex stamp of approval.
All of this is the most adorable thing I've ever heard.
I sent him exotic dancers. Celine, any shout-outs?
One real quick. I mean, this is going to sound a little cliche, but I've been doing this for a while now, and I have to give a shout-out to our esteemed leader, Saber A., of MC. The guy has pulled off what, in my opinion, is a small miracle by resurrecting my old alliance from the ashes, and with the help of yourself and myself and a lot of others, we have managed to accomplish some great things over the last year. So, Saber, thank you very much for prying it out of my cold, dead hands and getting things rolling again.
Cass?
I think I'd like to give a shout-out to my wife-to-be, because she lets me play all the time. And also to the downtime crew, who I have so much fun with.
That's a keeper right there. Andrew?
Nobody in particular, just you guys for having me on the show, and to myself for finally releasing this book that I've been working on for 2 years. So pretty proud of myself this week. I think that's what I'll go with. Shout out to Andrew Gruen.
Fun fact.
I don't think I've ever heard that happen before.
I'm happy to make a first happen here on Declarations of War.
Yeah, not shouting out all the people that backed this Kickstarter. Very interesting. Interesting decision.
I shout out to them every month in my backer updates. They know. I've written many an emotional shout out to them, being like, thank you so much for changing every day of my life the way that I live my life on a daily basis. So you know what? I'll retract my earlier shout out to myself and shout out to 3,000 other people instead. How about that?
Nah, fuck them.
Hey, don't talk about my backers like that, man. As I said, they changed my life. So there you go.
Yeah, fun fact. I backed the Kickstarter. Full disclosure, I have backed the Kickstarter. Celine was a contributing source to the book. But I backed it so long ago, I can't honestly remember which of my addresses it's being shipped to, because I've moved since.
I can figure that out for you.
Okay, great. So it's been a roulette every day. It's like, is it going to come to my house in Pennsylvania, California, or the other place in California? Oh, man.
We'll get sort of
one final shout out before we really get into it. Eve-bet.com. EveBet, New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on real life sports and Eve stuff with ISK. We've also got esports like the LCS. They've handled hundreds of trillions in bets since opening, so they're a service you can definitely trust. And they've also got some casual games like blackjack and slots, if you're into that. Give them a try, eve-bet.com. All right, Andrew. I guess let's begin at the beginning. Why in the world would you write about Why would you want to not just write about it, but take 2 years of your life to write about the history of internet spaceships?
That's a terrific place to start, actually. And it's not a question that I've asked myself too many times. I kind of just kind of wound up doing this.
Maybe that's a contributing factor to why I got done. You never stop to think about it.
I think the answer to the question, though, is that I used to work in the sort of the traditional gaming press. And when you work in the traditional gaming press, you know, as everybody I think in the EVE community is aware, like all we ever see in the traditional gaming press is just like the tip of the iceberg of what happens in EVE. You see like the stories about the big battles or something like that. But what people who are in the EVE community may not understand is how much mystique that gives EVE, like how cool that makes it seem from the outside. It makes it seem like this incredible, and it is actually this incredible, just like roiling pot of amazing stories, churning all the time. So I got really, really curious about it, and I wanted to go understand more, about, you know, what, like really what the cause for me to start working on this was. I was curious what causality meant within the context of EVE, because when you think about any other game ever, basically, there's no such thing as causality in those games, because if you're in World of Warcraft or something like that and you kill a raid boss, the raid boss respawns 24 hours later or a week later in some cases in certain raids. But like one guild doing better than another doesn't change anything for any of those guilds. Nothing different happens. If you die in World of Warcraft, you res, and there's really no penalty whatsoever. And so it really began for me as this like quest to kind of understand, like, is there actually this game out there that where causation, where one event actually precipitates the next event? Like, does that actually happen? And so I went out trying to kind of learn why these battles happen and what happens after that battle. Like, does that change things forever after that? And basically I went out looking to try to understand some of the story of what goes on in NullSec, and was not able to learn anything. That was really where it started. Was I sat down for weeks at a time, just sitting there looking for information about like what was the story? I was so sure when I started working on this project that somebody had already written the history of NullSec. I was sure of it. And I was just trying to find that document or that really, really long forum post or something like that, or that wiki out there somewhere where I could just read this. So all I wanted to do was read it. I wasn't trying to write a book at the time. And eventually I found myself just sort of putting together documents on my own, just trying to understand things, because all you would ever find were like these fragmented wikis here and there. Like you would find, 500 words about the history of, Imperial Republic of the North back in like 2006 or something like that. And then you would see like these little notes where that wiki entry would overlap with another one's wiki entry, and you would go and the same effect as like a normal Wikipedia rabbit hole. You would fall down the Wikipedia rabbit hole, but it's very, very difficult to understand what's happening within EVE if you just go off the wikis and stuff like that. So I started making these documents to try to organize everything. And after I was working on that, like just casually, just for like my own intellectual study for a couple of months, I began to realize like, no, I'm never going to find this document I'm looking for. That is the history of EVE. Amazingly, no one's done it before. And that became this incredibly exciting thing to me where I realized like, this is a really wonderful story. This is a really amazing thing that's happening out here, and no one's ever documented it before. And like, as a journalist, as a historian, that's immensely exciting. It's so, so cool to be able to work on something that no one's ever really studied before. It's really, really fascinating.
And fascinating for us too, because, you know, I think one of the most often asked questions from new players that come in, certainly to my group, and I think it's typical. Besides, like, you know, how's the specific feature work or whatever, is, you know, they love hearing about the history of EVE's organizations. They love hearing the veterans talk about these alliances and epic figures and massive battles that happened, and, you know, getting a piece of the narrative of EVE that they don't normally get in their day-to-day lives, because they can't look back. Like you said, there's no place to really go and see what's come before and like figure out what your place is in this huge sweeping narrative unless you've been part of it for a while and sort of figured it out for yourself. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I found most fascinating when I was like looking for sources, looking for any source of information to base my study off of was every corp, like every major corp, every large corp always has that like village elder who was around back in the old days, who like, you know, every second Friday night or something like that gets the new bros into a TeamSpeak channel and just tells stories for an hour or two about the old days. Those were some of the people that I got to learn stuff from. And you just sit in on those narrative story nights that like they reminded me of like ancient oral tradition. I know that's like overblown and stuff like that, but like there's something really, really cool about the way that history has been passed down in Eve that just reminds me of the way that it was done thousands of years ago before people started to think about writing this stuff down. And that's, again, like I know that I'm overblowing this and I get very like weepy techno-philosophical about Eve a lot, but
no, you know what? I kind of see it.
Absolutely.
I think Selene and I have both been in that elder position at one time or another. Much like telling an old story, you know, you have to add flair and character, and there's a lot of elements that go into it, and I guess for whatever reason we just don't seem super concerned about writing that stuff down. But it's almost kind of fun to, like you said, get the new guys together on TeamSpeak and have that sort of group experience where you're putting your own voice to the narrative that you've experienced in the game that these guys want to get a glimpse of. It's kind of a fun dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really reminds me of like when I picture it, I think of it as this very cyberpunk version of like, you know, an ancient tribal people sitting around a campfire and the village elder comes up and like it has this whole big like dance that goes along with with the story and everything like that, or like C-3PO telling the story of the Death Star exploding to the Ewoks or something like that. I love it. I love it.
I think that I mean, the sitting around the campfire analogy is pretty accurate, because as long as, you know, Eve has been around, as long as there were discussions or arguments about this happened, no, this happened, there have been stories that have been going on. And it's been really interesting to see how this sort of thing has evolved over the years. I mean, some people did try to write these things down. Some people, you know, made videos. Some people would make blog posts. Some people would do interactive pictures and types of things. But there'd never been any cohesive narrative thing that tied all of these, you know, separate events into one big long thing. And because as anybody, or as you well know, Andrew, it's not a simple task to even connect the dots on a few of these things. So seeing someone stand up and say, hey, I'm going to spend several months or longer putting this together was quite inspiring, I think, to a lot of people, which is why you got the response to the Kickstarter that you got.
Yeah, and that's wonderful to think about it in that light. When what you said makes me think about is actually that, you know, if you're somebody who's listening to this, who at one point in their Eve career, you know, actually did sit down and just write the history of their alliance, or just wrote, you know, wrote a really long blog post or a forum post sometime about just summarizing for somebody who was new, who was asking like, what was the Great War about? Or what happened in the Great Northern War? Something like that. I probably read your post and it probably helped me out and gave me some clues as to what was going on. And so like, I know that some people have mentioned that there's been a lot of like aborted attempts to write down the history of Eve, that people get started on it and then they realize what a really monumentally huge task it actually is to put all these pieces together. And then they, you know, they'd work on it for a couple of months and then they give up. But I probably found their work. Like most of those people, I probably stumbled across their work at some point or another, and it contributed to me being able to connect the dots all of these years later. Like there were old history blogs on a forum from like Reikoku which was a member corp of Band of Brothers that must have been written back in 2004. Like these things that somebody wrote that stuff down and had no idea that they were helping me out 11 years later or 12 years later. But their work still did contribute to this eventual collection of the entire history.
let's talk a little bit about process. When you're facing with something this big, I guess there's two questions that come to mind is, A, how did you figure out your starting point? And then, B, how did you gain access to these people, these village elders, to go beyond the 500 words in the wiki and capture that oral tradition in a way that was authentic?
Well, how do you figure out where to start is a really, really interesting question, and there is no good answer to it. Probably the first 3 to 4 months that I worked on this was incredibly frustrating, and involved a lot of me just like reading a lot of everything, because it's basically like the hardest part of a puzzle is putting the first two pieces together. Once you have something to go off of, then you can start to build off of that narrative, and you can start to attach things to what you already know. But putting two pieces together from the start is the most difficult thing. And so like when I first started out, I had, a ton of just assorted information, and you don't know where to begin. You don't know what dots connect to what. And so I my answer to that is I had no idea where to start. And I certainly didn't know how big of a project this was going to end up being. Ultimately, I decided that the only way to do this was to just start from the very beginning and to start in beta. And so I started going around finding just the oldest players that I knew, the oldest people that I could find. I would talk to CCP and just be like, who's been around since the beta? Who's been around since 2003? And they were able to point me in the direction of a couple of really long-term veterans. But like one of the most interesting things about this is that EVE is so old. And the world is so old and the history is so old that like even people who were there at the time don't necessarily remember what it was like. It's a bit of a challenge to rack your brain and try to remember what you were doing in a video game 13 years ago. It's quite a challenge. And so anyways, I decided just to start from the beginning, because once I understood, as I had mentioned, that like EVE was a game where causality mattered and causation was a thing that you had to think about, and that you could think of EVE as a sequence of historical events that one led to the other. Once I figured that out, I was like, okay, I'm going to start from the beginning and I'm going to understand each event as a consequence of the event that came before it. Which sounds really obvious to people who have been playing the game for a really long time, but when you're coming from outside of EVE and you're comparing it to every other game out there, that's not necessarily a given. Where you start is at the very, very beginning, knowing absolutely nothing about the game, and you go in and you learn the name, Tranquility, and you figure out like, oh, EVE is a single server game. Like it's hard to even imagine what like bottom level zero I was starting at when I first started working on this book. Just learning anything about the game was step one for me. And if you could remind me, what was question B?
Oh, before we get to that, you said something really interesting.
Sure, of course.
You were taking a look at EVE events, from the beginning, and then each event as a consequence of the events before it. Did you find that, maybe this is a little too high level for this early in the interview, but did you find that hypothesis to have been true? Like, there is almost a deterministic quality to EVE, that things were set in motion and everything is sort of predictably followed from the previous events? Or did you find that things were more chaotic and a lot of unexpected things happened in the larger narrative?
Certainly a lot of chaotic things happen. Like, it's once in a while something happens that really just mixes things up. And like if you ever listen to hardcore history, that Dan Carlin always uses the phrase like history throws a curveball once in a while that you're not expecting. But other than that, generally speaking, you can see the outcomes of wars generally affect the balance of power. You see that people when an alliance shatters, it creates power vacuums that you can see once you zoom out and you start looking at the history of Nullsec from like a full meta historical perspective, you can start to see that the way things played out was very logical. And that things happened according to the way that they happen in the real world. Like power vacuums invite conflict. They invite larger organizations to come in and fill that void and gain more power, and then eventually go after each other. And I think that one of the benefits of working on a book like this that is completely zoomed out and is viewing Eve from a total bird's eye perspective is you can start to see those things happen for the first time. Whereas from this like soldier's perspective that most pilots in Eve have, it doesn't look like history is based on causation in Eve. It looks like just like things happen and then whatever happens, happens, because you're so zoomed in, you can't see the much larger narrative going on around you. But like one of the most profound things that I felt so excited about when I kind of figured out, was so back in 2006, there's this, you know, really large, the largest war in Eve history at the time was Band of Brothers invading Ascended Frontier. And nobody at the time really understood it, but that probably turned out to be one of the greatest mistakes in the history of Eve, because Band of Brothers trounces Ascended Frontier and Ascended Frontier falls, and it totally upsets the power balance in NullSec for years to come. And it's probably as a direct result of that that you have the outcome of the Great War that you end up having. If Ascended Frontier is still around to fight in the Great War and to be on a different side or to back up certain people or to not leave their allies alone because they're dead, the history of Eve could have been much, much more different. And it's fascinating to kind of look back and be able to see from a bird's eye perspective the history of Eve.
Andrew, I wanted to jump in and ask you a quick question, because I remember when Tony Gonzalez was writing the Eve novels, like, you know, Empyrean Age and Templar One and everything. And he, you know, he had to kind of walk a fine line with regard to, now granted, these were, you know, works of fiction, but based in the Eve universe, he had to make decisions with regard to how he was going to depict some of these events. You know, how technical do you get? How open do you and accessible do you make what you're writing to an external audience? What were some of the difficulties that you found in trying to explain things like, how deep did you want to go, and did you not end up going, or what was the path you walked by trying to explain this to someone who had never picked up a book or had never read about or had never played the game before?
I think even more fundamentally, if you want to touch on whether this intended audience is for Eve players or for external audiences.
My goal from the very, very beginning, and this kind of sounds like, kind of sounds like a marketing line, but I'm going to go for it anyways. My goal was to create a book that fully works for Eve players, and that is interesting and is fascinating for Eve players, and will teach them something about the game that they didn't know, while still making it completely accessible to a lay audience who knows nothing about Eve. And so the book starts. It starts with opening with an in-depth description of a battle, and I try to be very like fun and exciting with it, with the opening, with lasers and spaceships and all that good stuff that I love so much. But then the next chapter dives right in from the beginning and explains Eve from the ground up so that anybody who doesn't understand anything about Eve, can get in and within one chapter begin to understand the sort of inside baseball that we're going to be talking about for the remaining chapters. It is absolutely a book that is intended to be for, number one, for Eve players. Like, I wanted so badly to create something for everybody that like your grandmother could pick up and actually understand. But my central preoccupation was like, I can't fail the Eve audience. I absolutely have to create something that is interesting and fascinating for these people first and foremost. And if I fail the lay audience, that's not great, but it's fine. I have to nail this for the Eve audience. And I honestly think I'm very, very happy with the final product. And I think that I've created something that can actually be enjoyed by the lay person who doesn't know Eve and the Eve audience as well. I brought a finished copy of the book to Christmas, and my great uncle, who I never actually talked to, he was looking at the book, he was poring over it, and I just saw him at one moment just sitting in the corner, just like engrossed in my book, and like every 10 minutes or so he would emerge from the corner and just shout, "This is like Star Wars."
Nice.
I was like, that was the most gratifying thing I've ever heard, because like, I want the Eve community to love this and to have this become like a part of the, like the lexicon of history, in Nelsec, and have people adopt this as like a text that people refer new players to understand what happened in Eve. But at the same time, I want people to just like have fun with it as like a spaceship story. Like, I want it to just be fun and be like, yes, lasers, man. Like, anyway, so that's, I hope that answers your question.
Well, the ultimate test is when this comes in and after I read it, I'm going to be lending it to my parents and see if they understand EVE Online. And if you're one for two on that, I think you've got a winner there.
I hope so. And I think that, like, to talk more about like the process of it, I think that there are a lot of things about EVE that if you don't get into like the specific jargon, a lot of what EVE is very intuitive to people. It's very... it reads a lot like a traditional war history. Because when you're like, you don't need to know the, like the really intricate details of Starbase sovereignty back in 2007, to understand that Band of Brothers, as I've said before, invaded the Ascended Frontier. Like that's something that everybody understands. And you can visualize this spaceship invasion, and have a really good time with it. You don't necessarily need to understand, Sov warfare. You don't need to understand structure grinding, all these different things. And to answer, Celine's question, I think that one of the things that I kind of wish that I was able to do a little bit more, with this book. And I'll do a fair amount of, but I would have loved to spend more time, like, just talking to people like Celine about, like, fleet tactics. I really would have liked to understand fleet tactics at a higher level, than what I was able to do. But it does turn out to be not like a huge mistake or anything like that, but like that was the one thing that, like, if I could do it again, I would love to spend more time with really high ranking, really experienced fleet commanders and understand the tactical game a little bit better.
Speaking of talking to Celine, so the other question, going way back to the thing that I wanted to ask you, my two-parter, which is, how did you get in touch with guys like Celine, these old village elders that had all this oral history, and get them to open up to you and, you know, capture their capture that history in a really authentic way? What was that process like?
I'm afraid. How did you get started here?
I think Celine in particular was really easy, because I'm pretty sure that he direct messaged me the first day that my Kickstarter went live. I don't think it was very difficult to contact Celine. I'm pretty sure he was one of my first backers in like the first couple hours of the project. He just jumped all over it and was really excited about it. And that was like a pretty common theme that I found, is that a lot of people were really excited to be able to tell their stories. You know, they were excited to have somebody who, you know, I like to think of myself as a relatively serious journalist who really wanted to get this story right. And to have someone like that who really had some credibility, who really took this seriously. And I think that the veterans of the game really responded to that. But it was at times a struggle, to have that credibility, because prior to this, I didn't have a name in the EVE community. I wasn't somebody that people just intrinsically knew or trusted. And so there were times where people were like, well, who's this guy? I don't know who this is. I'm not going to talk to him. These occasionally were people who were difficult to get in contact with. I still remember the first couple of days when I was running my Kickstarter, I heard from Sir Mole, who sent me a DM on Kickstarter. And for those of you who aren't familiar with like the deep history of EVE, Sir Mole was basically the most powerful person in EVE for many years, a legend in the history of EVE. And so I get this DM and I'm like, this must be someone trolling me. Like, there's no way this is actually Sir Mole. Like, I'm actually like talking to Stalin himself right now or something like that. And I remember I was so nervous about somebody impersonating Sir Mole that I actually asked him, I was like, you need to prove your identity. Like, send me some kind of proof that you are actually who you say you are. So occasionally that turned into the more challenging aspect of things.
Andrew, I got a few quick questions for you here. And we'll kind of just to follow up on the one that you just said, it is interesting that, you in a way were able to do what you did, considering the fact that you did kind of come into everything fairly cold. I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are, what your opinion is why do you think that you managed to do this and get the credibility to pull all these people in and tell these stories as opposed to someone else doing it?
I think that one of the things that you run into when you have people within the community try to do it, is they often get too inside baseball. That they understand better than anybody else just how much detail you can find. And I think that a lot of people who have tried to do it before have gotten kind of lost in the weeds, of the actual incredibly minute details, of a corporation's history, or, you know, these interviews that they'll do where they can find out everything that they ever wanted to know. Whereas I was able to come in and I was able to ask bad questions and not know what was going on. And that's one of the things that's, I was not able at first to have a really in-depth conversation with somebody about the history of their corp or about the history of their alliance or the history of this war or whatever. I was just trying to understand the very basic skeleton of what happened in the history of NullSec. Like, how could I tell the history of NullSec in like an hour, in a speech or something like that? Like, just this, the very basic bullet points of what's going on there. In general, I think it's kind of what I said, like people were just excited that someone was taking this seriously. Someone who, you know, a big part of it, honestly, like if I'm being honest, like a big part of it was the fact that my Kickstarter was already a success. So people, it had an air of legitimacy to it that I think people responded to that said like, okay, this is going to be the official Eve history. I need to talk to this person. And if people don't want to talk to you, one of the most effective things, and I learned this back in journalism school, one of the most effective things you can do is just say to them, like, well, that's okay. Your enemy's going to get to tell the full story then, and you're not going to get a chance for a rebuttal.
just to interject Ouch. Something here, your initial Kickstarter goal was, I believe, 12,500?
That's correct, yeah.
And you ended up with, was it 96 or 98,000?
Yeah, about 96,000, yeah.
The total is officially $95,729 spread out over 3,116 backers.
So you were
a pretty healthy amount.
Yeah, you were willing to, you came out there and you were willing to put this in people's hands or a version of this in people's hands for $12,500. I think that was probably something that lent it a bit of legitimacy as well.
How did you get your first backers? You know, you said that after it was successful, you kind of had this air of legitimacy, but how did you get to that point?
I have a reputation in the games community. I was somebody, I used to work for Wired, and a site called the Penny Arcade Report that was fairly popular. I used to do a little bit of Eve reporting for the Penny Arcade Report, where I would talk to people. I did a couple of stories about Helicity Boson, a couple of stories with Trebor from the CSM. So I had some people enjoyed my Eve writing prior to that. And so I had some kind of a social footprint in the games community. And I'm also like, I've been working in journalism for quite a while. So I knew everybody in the press. I knew what it was like to plan a marketing plan to get the word out there. And so that was really where the first kind of burst came from. When I first launched the project, I really thought I was going to have to like fight and claw to get to 12,500. That was my understanding of how this was going to go, that it was going to be really easy to get people like curious, but not enough that they would actually give me their money. And I definitely did not expect that the Eve community would just come out and trust me to be able to produce this. I thought I was going to have to work much harder to win them over. And I think that in large part, I've spent the last 2 years working really hard to win over really hardcore Eve fans. Because I think even when the Kickstarter was really successful, there was still a lot of people saying things like, how could you people be so stupid? This is clearly a scam. Well, just wait. He's going to run off with the money. This is how this is going to go, or something like that. So the first push happened completely by surprise. People, just as soon as I explained the project, people knew that it was something that they wanted. And they came out in droves right on the first day. It was one of the most exciting days of my life.
I got a question. As an Eve grunt, I've heard stories back and forth from both sides of battles I was in, from opposing people, and it's like we've all discussed this, how people like telling the stories, You know, you were interested in finding out what the guy on the other side was doing when you were doing what you were doing. How were you surprised at all by the number of people who came forth and wanted to tell you their story?
I think I wasn't surprised. Really, once it kind of got rolling, it became very clear that like a lot of these people have tremendous stories that they really haven't had a chance to like tell anybody in the outside world about. You know, and that's a frustrating thing, I think, for a lot of people, that they have these amazing things. They know about these amazing things that have happened in Eve, and they don't really have a chance to get that message out to the wider world. And I think a lot of people viewed this as their opportunity to do that. And furthermore, I think that there are a lot of people who got frustrated over time that their side of the story wasn't being represented. And so they viewed this as an opportunity to kind of write an official record as opposed to the winner just getting to write history or that kind of thing.
So do you feel that, because you were an outsider looking in a sense, that, that people didn't feel like some of the other examples of people trying to write their history, they were too close to it. They had an axe to grind. Do you think that because you didn't have an axe to grind, that just really helped everything along?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that people, I at first thought it was going to be a weakness, of the project that I didn't have a lot of experience in the Eve community. I didn't have any name recognition. But it turned out to be a great strength, because the people who, when you're in the Eve community, the only people who really have the connections or the sources to be able to pull off a history, of this style, are generally people who are very embedded in those alliances, you know. So like one of the history writers that I have a lot of respect for is a guy named James 312 in Goonswarm. But like all of his stuff is amazingly well written, but it's all from the point of view of a goon. So it can't exactly be the official record. So you can use that as one side of the story, as long as you're going to the other side and balancing things out and making sure that you're getting both sides of the story. And I think that was one of the things that really lended me some legitimacy, is once I was able to talk to a few people and they saw how interested I was in actually getting the correct story. And not just, you know, reparroting a lot of the old lines about the stories of Eve, and actually making sure that I was talking to everybody involved and getting the true story of what happened there. Then people kind of came out in droves, and they were very excited about this as an opportunity to tell those stories.
Kind of as a follow up to what Cass was talking about here or asking you about, this is about a 2.5 part question. I was curious as if you could tell us, how many people did you actually like interview for this book, and like how many people did you have like of those helping you vet the material, and did you ever run into any topics which were contentious where there were disagreements and you had to like really change something or modify it in some way?
So the first question, I think I interviewed somewhere between 60 and 70 people. It might be 60 to 70 interviews and maybe like 40 to 50 individuals. I don't remember the exact numbers anymore. It's probably been a year and a half since I was really in depth, in interviewing. But it was a really substantial number of people. It was more people than I've certainly ever interviewed for any individual project. And it was, a lot of those interviews were not very fruitful. Some of them you find people who they're like, oh yeah, absolutely, I'd love to talk to you. And then you start asking them questions and they're like, yeah, I don't remember anything about that. I don't remember that. That was like 10 years ago. Ask me about something else. And they're like, oh, I that's what I need to know about. So I can't, I have nothing else to ask about. Can you remind me what the other part of your question was?
How many people did you have vetting the material, like fact checkers, and how did you go about deciding who they were and such?
Oh, so, generally, I would let people who I interviewed, who I thought to be good sources, I would let them read chapters that were about them. And so I would let multiple people from different sides read the chapter. And if none of them on either side really had any beef with it, then I figured I probably had something really good on my hands. I had something really historically strong. If both sides could agree that it was pretty well written and that there was nothing glaringly wrong about it. And so let me see. The last question was about things that were contentious. Yeah.
What were some instances and I think this is leading towards the content of the book which is where we want to take this next. Did you run into anything like that where you had problems with people agreeing, and how did you handle it?
So there were fewer problems than you would imagine. I know when I first started the project, a lot of people, you know, came up to me and they said, like, you know, everybody's going to be lying to you. Everybody's going to be telling you a false version of what's going on to try to skew you towards their version of events. And I actually didn't really find that to be true. There is an inherent bias in everybody's story, but it's generally really easy to pick out because what you'll hear is like people saying stuff like I would finish a chapter. I would send it to somebody for fact checking to see, like, you know, did I get this story right? And they'll say something like, well, most of this is good, but those guys were dicks. They sucked. Like, they were evil. Like, that kind of thing or something like that. It's like, well, okay, fine. That's your point of view. I'm not going to, when we're writing the official historical record, we try to refrain from using words like they were dicks. Things like that. So, like, the bias, it tends to be really obvious and really easy to pick out. There were, if I remember right, there were a couple instances where people would tell me, like, oh, no, you got this wrong. You got this wrong. This didn't happen in this year. This happened in the previous year. And it would freak me out. Because this is, you know, I'm coming from the outside of the Eve community. I take a lot of stock in what these people say, but I've also been studying Eve's history now for a year and a half, 2 years. There were a couple of moments where people were like, no, you got this wrong. This is terrible. What are you doing? And then I would go back and I would spend days just like double checking everything that I wrote. And then I would arrive at this moment where I was like, wait a minute. No, you're wrong. And it's this tremendously validating moment for me as a historian of Eve to be able to go to someone and say, like, no, actually, your memory's faulty. I have the data points here on .land.
Nice.
Or, usually, like, on .land. .land is the easiest way to, like, prove something actually happened, put dates to things or put numbers to things and be certain that something happened the way that it actually did happen. In general, people don't lie, but they do make mistakes. I found that. And I've said this many times in speeches because I find it tremendously fascinating that people will generally have a very, very good recollection of individual events. Like, they can tell you the story of something that happened very, very accurately, even like a decade later. But they'll be wrong about when it happened by entire years. You know, like, for whatever reason, the human brain has a terrible filing system, but it can remember these individual moments with real, real great clarity, but they have no idea when it actually happened. They'll tell you something that happened in 2006 when actually it happened in 2010 or something like that. It can be very, very interesting.
Okay. So let's get a little bit away from the process and let's talk about the meat and the content of the book. I'm very curious to know, and I guess we'll all find out pretty soon, because we'll be hopefully getting the copies of the book in our mailboxes, one of them. but for people that are thinking about buying it or you know, are waiting in anticipation, like myself and Cyan Aviander and tons of other people that just are scraping and clawing and can't wait to get a handle on this, what is the structure of the book? Do you take it purely chronologically? Do you look at regions, like things that are going in the south, the north? Is it a little bit of both, or does it kind of weave around the significant events all over the place?
Generally speaking, first of all, thank you so much for saying such nice things about how excited you are for the book. You can't imagine how cool it is to, like, it's so tremendously validating to have spent all this time on this and to have people really excited to read it. It's just wonderful. As to the structure of the book, I keep it chronological as much as I possibly could. There are a couple of moments where you just can't, because there are really important things happening in 2005. With the major powers of 2005, but then also in 2005, there are some upstart alliances that are forming and having very important things happen to them, which don't affect NullSec history in 2005, but the dawn of that alliance will begin to affect things later down the road in 2007. And so you have to kind of hop around a little bit, and go back in time once in a while and say, okay, let's stop the story because, we just spent all this time going through, you know, the first major wars usually up in the north. I focus a lot on the northern sort of hemisphere, in the first couple chapters of the book, first few chapters of the book, up to the end of the Great Northern War, which becomes like this big focal point and becomes this very important thing because it leads to the creation of Band of Brothers, which, as most people, I think, even who don't know that much about Eve's history, most people are aware that that becomes a very, very significant thing. Band of Brothers becomes very incredibly powerful over time. But so we follow that story for quite a while, but then you kind of have to stop and say like, okay, but now we have to talk for a minute because then some weird things start happening and this like weird migration happens in like 2004, 2005, which is when Eve became available as a digital product. And suddenly like a lot of people from America started playing. And so you get the goons show up, around that time, like midway through the book, we have to stop and say like, okay, we've done this story, but now we have to go back in time a little bit because we have to talk about the goons, forming. We have to talk about, Ascendant Frontier coming over because Earth and Beyond has just died. And, all these major groups from Earth and Beyond are just transplanting themselves wholesale into Eve Online. And that has tremendous impact on, the narrative of, and then the Nullsec power balance. And so whenever possible, I always try to keep it chronological and keep it as logical as possible and say, and be able to show like this event led to this, this event led to this, and just keep it moving so that everybody can see the domino effect of how what happened in 2003 is part of a chain of events that leads to what happens in the end of the book. Like it is inextricably a part of what goes on there. So whenever possible, I try to do that, but there's just so many like interesting little asides that you get to take once in a while that you have to take a moment, to get away from the main narrative and try to appreciate some of like the grandeur of what's going on and take a peek somewhere else and say like, well, this is the, like what the most powerful entities are doing, but that's not everybody. That's not all of what's going on right now. There are other things happening.
Were there any, I mean, besides the major arc of Bob and Goons, which is very captivating in terms of space drama, or general drama, like it's a really epic story. Did you get the opportunity to tell smaller stories that sort of contributed to this larger narrative but weren't the thing? And if so, what was your, you know, if you could tell one or two favorite events or alliances or narrative arcs that were sort of happening in parallel to these major galaxy-shaping events?
I generally, for this book, focused mostly on the galaxy-shaping events. Like the story of Bob and Goons isn't the only story that is of that scale. Like there were a couple other things that happened in Nullsec history that were of the same or similar scale of what happened in the Great War.
We'll go for that then.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I my favorite parts of the book deal with Band of Brothers versus Ascendant Frontier, because there's the thing that I had so much fun with this book that I don't think a lot of people really remember. And I mean, you guys might, because you guys were around a long time. But back in the old days, people didn't talk like they do nowadays in Eve. In the old days, you had people who would go on and give grand leadership speeches, like within the character of a space admiral. And it was so much fun. It's so much fun to include those quotes and those speeches from people, who are writing in the moment from that character of a space dictator. And it's one of those interesting things that once the goons took power, and became the most powerful cultural entity within Eve, that kind of fell by the wayside. But was certainly in the era of Band of Brothers and Ascendant Frontier, you had these two like very prominent, basically dictators staring each other down, giving these like Churchill-esque speeches at one another, and creating this fantastic war drama, all this time. And so there's a lot more to the book just besides Bob and Goons that makes up like the latter third of the book, maybe. But there's certainly many things that have happened, like Band of Brothers versus Ascendant Frontier, or like, the old Nuvenal Alliance wars back in the Great Northern War, or the war between like Jericho Fraction and Taggart Transdimensional and stuff like that back in 2003, and the story of Ragnar's hat, which I don't know if people actually remember nowadays. It's so hard for me to actually know what people know about Eve's history anymore.
I think probably one of the most interesting cultural developments, and kind of a sad cultural development in some ways, is Eve players have gotten so much more meta now, everything's about content and relevance and being bros and, you know, meeting each other in real life. Whereas back in the day, there was some deep, deep personal hatred, and like you said, there's a cult of personality aspect to it, where people just hyped about stuff that was going on in the game, and, you know, the metagame was there, but it didn't have this kind of mainstream linguistic quality to it, where people spoke in that way. They still did it. They still infiltrated all the alliances and still tried to, you know, create fun content for everyone, but no one talked about it in that way.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's the dynamic that you're talking about is essentially, I mean, I love that Andrew talks about how when these large powers were going at it, it wasn't the guy that was playing Mully and the guy that was playing Psyvok. It was Psyvok talking to his people and Psyvok talking to Mully and Mully talking to his people and letting the whole galaxy know that this is what's going to happen because I am Sir Mully. And this was copied by, like he mentioned Jericho Fraction. Anybody that knows who that is knows that Jade Constantine was quite the character. And all of these cool things went on the way they did primarily because of the fact that there weren't as many, or Eve meets were practically non-existent for the first few years of Eve. People had enemies, had mortal enemies that they fought for a year or two at a time. They were never on the same TeamSpeak server. They never so much as said a word to each other outside of, you know, shooting each other on the battlefield. And when that started to change in 2006, 2007, and so on, you saw the dynamic change. And I lost track of the number of people that would go to like FanFest or eVegas and say, I just met this guy and he's the coolest guy in the world, but I hate this motherfucker. And now I'm friends with him. I don't know how I'm going to go back and shoot him next week. It's a really interesting dynamic.
Cassie, you have a question?
Well, Andrew, when you were putting this together, how long do you think it took? Because you were looking at the big picture in ways that I don't think just about anybody in Eve really could, right? So you're putting this together. How long did it take before you started realizing or had the realization that it, you know, the Eve is kind of like this little microcosm, its history, just like the real world?
I think I was working on it maybe 4 months before I really started to understand it, really started to grasp that I could chart a line from that first day that the game launched to, you know, 2000. I think the game, the book ends around late 2009. So I think I was working on it for about 4 months, and I don't remember exactly what it was that started to finally give me that impression. It's a slow accumulation of things. You start learning what the right questions to ask are. Oh my God, it looks like, Like you know when you're watching like a detective show or something like that, and they have this like cork board up and they've got the string attached from like 19 different pictures and different pieces of evidence and stuff like that, and they're trying to connect everything. I have one of those. I have
Pixar didn't happen.
I posted one in my backer update like a year and a half ago. So I have Pix.
Nice.
It's this program called Scapple where you connect these word clouds, and it's this giant cloud of like about 60 different sources of me saying like, okay, well, this guy knows this guy and this guy can introduce me to this person. This guy might not have good things to say about this person because he was in this corp and this corp hates this corp, all these different things, like trying to understand, the grand narrative of what's going on here. It was really a tremendously difficult thing to do.
Well, did it surprise you at all? Well, once you did come to that realization.
I don't know if there was ever like a really surprising moment, because I think it was a really steady realization. I think it was this, like, I got into it and, you know, I don't think there was a day when I realized like suddenly, oh, this is an amazing story and I can tell this amazing story. I think I just sort of slowly got into it. I think right up until, probably really quite deep into the project, there were so many times where I panicked that I was never going to be able to find this information that I needed, because some of it was so deeply buried. And some of it was just like, if you couldn't get in contact with the right source, you may never learn the history of how some of these events actually transpired. Some of these stories are like, they're the amount of people who actually remember them in any significant amount of detail are incredibly rare. And if you don't get in touch with one or two of those people, it can be a really difficult process to actually write that story. And there are one or two moments in this story where I have to say, like, I worked really hard to find a balancing source to balance this out. But I actually wasn't. So this is a one-sided account. Please distrust it appropriately. And that happens more often than not. And I understand I'm kind of rambling a little bit and not getting exactly to the nut of your question. But it's a tremendously difficult thing to write the history of Eve, partially because it's an international community. You know, getting in touch with the Russians and learning Russian history is not an easy task. There's only a couple of them that really speak good English and will actually talk to you. And the Russian community kind of has its own thing going on. They don't really interact too much with the Western community. I mean, it's even if an organization is mostly German, a lot of them don't speak English, and it's very difficult to get that history. So there were a couple of times where it didn't line up, and I became quite concerned that I would never actually learn that history. So I think right up until the end of the book, I was worried that I wouldn't be able to fully pull it off.
Well, I have a question about it as far as when Eve players try to explain Eve to other people, and I've got about 10 years worth of having to do that, I've learned that the techno babble is one of the last things you need to get into. You don't need to talk about how they build the ships and how the market works and how they put the ships together and all that, all the techno babble, because it's more about the people. I've always found that Eve is, to me, it's kind of like a cross-up of some of the best science fiction, whether it's Star Wars and Babylon 5 and all that, because you get to play with these lasers and spaceships. But it's always the characters, because there's just so many interesting people and so much fun to be had. So when you're going through this, was there an actual conscious decision where you said, I have to just disregard this technobabble and just focus on the actual, you know, the events that are happening or the people involved?
It's a difficult question. I had a couple of, I had two editors. I actually don't think I answered, Celine's question from way earlier, which is to say, I think I had about 12 fact checkers, from the Eve community, who were helping me out with things and serving different roles from like people who knew certain events in really good detail, people who knew generally a lot about Eve's history and some people who knew things that were, who were just good bullshit detectors, that I like to have their eyes on my work. And I'm trying to remember. Okay, so if you could, again, I'm sorry to keep asking this, but if you could repeat that question. I wanted to answer that question of Celine's while I had it fresh in my mind, and I forgot what you had asked. I'm sorry.
Well, it's about the techno babble. Just moments you have to, you say that, you know, I have to throw this techno babble out and just focus on these events or the people that, you know, helped shape these events.
Right. Absolutely. So, thank you for repeating that. So I had two of my editors were these guys who I just knew from my journalism career, who were just really good at, they're good writers. They're really good at making things compelling. And I made sure that they didn't know anything about Eve. I kept them away from it. I kept them isolated from it so that anytime they started to get bored, I would know that was me. I had learned too much about Eve and I was starting to get too obsessed with the detail, and I had to kind of scale it back a little bit and find that middle ground between what I wanted to write and what these guys were willing to read about and could actually maintain their interest throughout it. And I think there are moments when you do start to get into the weeds a little bit on the details of what's going on. I think it's not so much for me. The problem wasn't about technobabble so much. It was about, I was so passionate about making this an authoritative history of NLSEC that there were times where it absolutely broke my heart that I had to leave a corporation or an alliance out of the book that I knew was important. And I knew that they had incredible things to offer the history of Eve. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't on the scale of Band of Brothers or Ascended Frontier, or Red Swarm Federation. And so you have these alliances that you know that they're really influential at this one point in the history of EVE Online. But because this is a narrative story, you can't just introduce all of these different characters over and over and over again, because readers then expect those characters to come back. And so you can't just introduce them one off and then get rid of them, very suddenly, because it still has to be a compelling story. People have to come along with the characters, and it gets very, very confusing if you keep introducing technical concepts or you keep introducing different characters or different alliances that you're never going to bring back again. And so that's sort of where I go with the jargon and techno babble is not the technical aspects, but getting too in depth on the history of Eve can actually be a fault in a history book about Eve.
Andrew, speaking of the things you had to leave out, I know that this has been a question that this is one of the first questions I see asked whenever a lot of people even learn about this book is, where does the history of this book end, and how did you make the decision for to end it in that spot?
So the book ends around the end of 2009. And so that was a decision that I made because the end of 2009 is basically when the Great War really ends and Band of Brothers admits defeat and leaves NullSec. Because what happens as a result of that is it's this event of such gravity that you can very clearly say that what happens after the Great War is a different story than what happens at the beginning of the Great War, what was happening before the Great War, which is rare, really rare in the history of Eve, because normally I talk about causality. I talk about there's these events where you can see this clear line of effect going up right until the end of the Great War. Then the Great War ends, and it's such a climactic moment that you can say, like, okay, let's cut this off right here. This is a great moment where this character that we've been following, this incredibly powerful corporation called Evolution and this incredibly powerful alliance called Band of Brothers is finally gone, and the power balance of everything in NullSec has just gone completely out of whack. And it becomes this really weird moment in the history of Eve where even though Red Swarm wins, they kind of come out of it weaker, because they had been fighting that war for 2 years. They didn't know what to do with themselves after Band of Brothers was dead. They had no idea. They had no, like, cultural mission anymore. And a lot of people started leaving the game. They were exhausted at the end of this war. And so, like, a lot of weird stuff starts happening in the history of Eve. And I started studying that stuff, and I did a lot of research into it. And I wrote some of those chapters. But the other thing that starts to happen that I found to be very significant is it stops being history in a lot of ways, and it becomes current events. Not necessarily what happens immediately after the Great War, but pretty soon after that, you start to see people who aren't telling you the full story anymore. Where people in the old days, they were more than happy to tell you all the different ways they screwed up, all the different times they screwed somebody over, or that they lied, all these different things. But when you get into like 2010, 2011, that line starts to get a little bit foggy. And suddenly people you can tell they're not telling you the full story, or they're telling you way too rosy of a version of events, or sometimes they'll straight up tell you like, nah, I can't tell you about that. It's not time yet. And you just know that in like 4 or 5 years, no one's going to care anymore, and they'll be willing to tell you that story again. But right now, it just the story of those events. And I get so excited about this. I love talking about it, so I ramble a little bit. But the story of those events is still important to the people who are in power now, and because of that, those stories can't properly be told yet because they're still too important to the power balance that people are willing to lie about them.
I love it. I love it. All right, Andrew. So I guess just two more questions for you. The first is, what's next? Do you have a next project? Are you thinking about doing a follow-up to this book in a couple of years? What are your thoughts on that?
Right now, I'm kind of... So the book launches in a few weeks. It's going to be, I think, like the third week of March. I'm still working on making sure that like all my backers get their stuff yet before I launch the book. But it should be like in the third week of March. Basically, everybody should have their books by then. And then I kind of see what happens. I've been away from the process of writing this book long enough that I wouldn't be completely opposed to just writing an offshoot, writing a sequel or something like that. But if it turns out that like nobody wants to buy it, and nobody wants to buy this book when it comes out, then obviously I won't do a sequel or anything like that. But I do have I do have ideas for follow-up books. So I have a couple of different projects that I'm working on sort of idly in the background. One of them is sort of this just offshoot project based within the Eve universe. And another one is not is not based in EVE at all, and is just, but is still based on Spaceship Combat. So that's an interesting part of it. But I'm not 100% sure. That's where I'm really trying to get at. I'm not 100% sure what comes next for me, because I have to see what happens with the book launch first. That will determine a lot about my life, because I poured all of my funding into this book for the Kickstarter project. I haven't made a dime off of it yet. In fact, I'm relatively in the hole for it, because I have faith that it'll do okay. So that needs to happen first. I need to get the book out there and see whether or not it's actually something people like.
And speaking of, good opportunity for you to plug the book. If someone out there was not visionary enough to back you on Kickstarter, how are they going to be able to get this book when it launches? Where is it going to be, on Amazon? Do you have a store? What's going on?
Yeah, it'll be on Amazon. So we're getting everything in a row. I have quite a few extra books left over from the Kickstarter that we're going to be shipping to Amazon within the next week or two, and then it will be available third week of March. I'm almost certain that'll be the date, unless something horrible happens. Well, I hope not, though. Fingers crossed.
And is this the kind of thing that, if it gets sold out, are you going to do another run, or do I have to buy all my Christmas presents in March?
It's a little bit of a balancing act, because if it goes really well, then I will sell out and people won't be able to get the book for quite a while, because I'll have to go back to my factory and say, okay, make another print run and then ship it across the ocean. And that'll take 6 weeks, maybe even more. So I could be out of stock for quite a while. So if it is something that you're interested in and you want to be able to see this relatively soon, it is something that I would recommend keeping your eye on and getting in relatively early. Within the first day or two that it launches, and trying to get your hands on one pretty quickly. Just because if it does go well, then it could sell out quite quickly.
All right, guys. Alec here to tell you about eveservers.info. Stop trusting random third parties with your Eve data. We're talking here with Andrew about all kinds of betrayals and crazy wars and stuff. You got to be careful with your own information. With eveservers.info, you and only you have access to your Corp and Alliance information. They got fully functioning, professionally built servers, complete API integration that's simple setup, simple to use, talking forums, TeamSpeaks, Jabber and instant message tools, other corp management tools that you need to be successful in Eve. Check out eveservers.info, and if you want more information, email them at eveservers@gmail.com. Fair enough, you guys. All right, Andrew. Thank you very, very much. Really appreciate you taking the time to come onto the show. I heard you speak at Eve Vegas. It was fantastic. If anyone else, I don't know if you're doing any other Eve meets or real events, fan fest, but if anyone has the opportunity to go see Andrew give a talk about this book, I highly recommend it. It's just the narrative stuff that he goes into. It's just so great, and I came away from that presentation 100% confident that this book was going to be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I actually will. I'll be at FanFest this year, and I'll also, then I'm going right from FanFest to PAX East. If anybody's going to be at PAX East, I'll be doing a talk there as well. So, thank you.
All right, go check out Andrew. Buy the book. Thank you for tuning in to Declarations of War. Good hunting, listeners. Fight!